You're listening to ACB Live Event here on ACB Radio, here with Brian and his guest, Pinky.
There you go. So, hey, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for hanging in there with us. I know the board went off to have their executive session. Rick and I went off to have a good burger with Kim Venerable. Venable. Got to get your mouth about four fingers from the microphone for them to hear you.
Okay.
Say hello, Pinky.
Hey.
See? Hey, it works. It's not quite the same as hello, Pinky, but it'll work.
It's Brian Charleston, by the way.
Anyway, with Kim, I had a great burger with Rick and Kim. And do you remember the name of her friend from California? Rick?
No.
No, I didn't think you did. I didn't hear it, actually, I don't think. I think she was introduced as my friend from California. Anyway, nonetheless, we're back to you again here on ACB Radio Live Event, coming to you from Las Vegas, actually the Golden Nugget Hotel on Fremont Street here in Las Vegas, Old Vegas. And there will be a presentation happening tomorrow, I think in the early afternoon, on healthy snack vending. And you heard just before we went to break an interview with the principal humanist from Human. And now you're going to hear it a little bit from the RSVA side of things. But because I love to cook, and anybody who's ever listened to the Yin Yang Show knows that about me, I get to talk about things beyond the just that narrow thing, if it's all right with Pinky.
That's absolutely fine with me.
Okay, so, Pinky, first off, let's make sure that everybody understands who you are and why they should be listening up to what you have to say. So you were telling me that you are from a small town in Virginia?
Yes, I'm from a very small town in Virginia.
Was it a coastal town?
It is actually an inland town in the Shenandoah Valley. For those of you out there that might recognize it, it's called Stewart's Draft. It's basically where I-81 meets I-64.
And it had a big population, did it?
Big population of 15,000 when I left.
Yeah.
Maybe a little larger now.
Yeah, maybe a little larger. Though, you know, not too many people are doing that big, long driving anymore. Everybody seems to be doing everything from their living room with a remote control.
Right, exactly.
Anyway, so you were there, and then you decided that you would go off to college, got a degree, did you?
I did. I went to Virginia Tech and graduated with a degree of hospitality and tourism management. But I was headed to front office management and hotels, but decided that I was not happy unless I was around food, so I was going to cook.
And so you then took yourself into learning by doing, or what kind of training did you get?
I looked around at culinary schools and realized that I didn't have enough money to go to the big name schools, and learned about ACF apprenticeships and found out that there was one in New Orleans. And basically that was the end of the road. Once I figured out I could go to New Orleans, that's where I knew that I belonged. And so I went.
And so when did you move down there?
2001, right before September 11th.
Aha. So you went down there, and again, you went to school for a short period of time.
Short period of time, but I landed a job with the Brennans, and I was learning so much on my job and not so much at culinary school that I asked them if they would fire me if I quit culinary school, and they said no, and I said hallelujah. So I kept on cooking and learned way more in the actual kitchen than I was in the classroom, so I just kept going down that road instead.
You know, I said that I have my degree in political science, and I will tell you, I learned so much more working for the Oregon State Legislature as the Assistant Sergeant-at-Arms of the State Senate there than I ever did in the classroom.
Oh, absolutely. It's all about on-the-job training.
Yeah, absolutely. OJT.
Yep.
So you did there, worked in a couple of restaurants in that area?
I worked in many restaurants, actually, throughout my tenure in New Orleans, ranging from everything between pantry, which is, you know, salad prep, pastry, to the hotline, saute, grill, basically every station that there was.
How about beignets?
I could hook up some beignets, yes.
There you go.
I'm actually working on a red velvet beignet recipe.
Oh. With cream cheese on top?
With cream cheese dipping sauce, I'm thinking, yes.
Stop it, Rick. We just had lunch.
That doesn't mean anything. You can always talk about dinner.
There you go.
Let's end this now, and let's go eat some of those.
There you go. So you decided that there was a ceiling to working in that regard. So
there was. I mean, let's be honest. You know, I got myself to the sous chef level along the way. But I was actually, you know, you have to be over in charge of everything, and you have to be very, very particular about every detail. And, you know, I actually started having problems because of my vision. So, you know, I actually reached an economic ceiling. Nobody wants to pay a cook for anything. So I thought that it might be a better solution to come to the Randolph Shepherd Program. Especially the other thing that I was really looking at was I could organize my workspace exactly how I wanted it to be, and I wouldn't be tripping over things all the time, hopefully, and organize the system exactly how I wanted it, which seemed to be a great option to go with.
Excellent. So you then left the restaurant, working in the restaurant. Did you get formal training as a vendor?
I did, yes. I went through an abbreviated OJT program in Louisiana. So I have a license now, and I'm ready to go. I got my first stand last week.
But haven't opened the doors, so to speak,
yet,
right?
Have not opened the doors since I'm here in Vegas, and then I'm actually riding in Mardi Gras and then going to the ACB convention in D.C. and then opening right after that.
Very good. So I'm going to back up and ask a few questions about the other things you just threw in the mix there. Okay, so you did the OJT. You were assigned a stand. Tell me about the stand you're going to.
My stand is at New Orleans Criminal Court. It's pretty small, but I believe that there are a lot of options to be had there. I plan on incorporating healthier foods into the mix because I believe that the needs of the current consumers for healthy options are not being met. So I'm going to diversify the menu and, you know, upgrade the menu a little bit and try to get some more upscale and healthy options in there and hopefully cater to everybody in the building. It's pretty small. It doesn't have a whole lot of equipment, but I believe that with some creativity, we can bring some good things to the mix.
Good. So wet stand, dry stand, the nature of it? Do you have coolers and all that kind of stuff?
Yes, there's actually there are a few three vending machines within the snack bar itself, and it actually has fryers, a flat top, sandwich station, some coolers with bottled drinks, which will contain prepared foods, grab and go sandwiches and salads, hopefully once I get there.
And how much of the stuff that the previous owner's not the right word, the previous licensee,
right?
It was all prepackaged stuff?
No, huh?
Or a lot of prep in the space itself?
It was a lot of frozen food, I would say. A lot of fried food, which we'll keep some of that, but hopefully bring in some more fresh food as well.
Good, excellent. So you're getting excited. That's going to be happening in a couple of weeks, you say?
Opening day is slated for March 9th at this point.
And the previous vendor, has this stand existed for some time? Do you know?
The previous vendor had the stand for the last 10 years and actually acquired a much larger operation, Baton Rouge Community College. So he's very excited about that and has moved on. So I'll take his old space.
Is there a lot of moving around in the vending program in Louisiana? A lot of people aging out, so to speak, giving opportunities for younger vendors?
Not as much as we...
Not as much as you'd like.
There are a few new vendors still waiting for stands. We definitely have a shortage of vending stands in Louisiana, but there's a lot of musical stands going on, too. So there are opportunities out there.
Well, good luck with that.
Thanks.
Good luck with that. So you mentioned that... I'm going to get back to this being in the parade. What are you doing in the parade?
I actually ride on a Mardi Gras float in a crew called Tux, which is very large. It parades on Valentine's Day this year, next Saturday, so that should be lots of fun.
So when you ride the float, and I've done riding on floats in the Rose Day parades in Portland, Oregon.
Wow.
So what does this float look like, and what is your engagement in that whole process of being a member of this team?
Well, our theme this year is Tux Saves the Day, so our floats have superhero themes going on. And New Orleans parades, as everybody knows, are a little different. You throw beads and trinkets and things along the way, so I've actually created some signature throws of my own by twisting Mardi Gras beads. And getting some crew emblem throws and things like that. So it's actually it's definitely a crowd participation event, and it's preceded by a ball that we had a couple weeks ago, and it's actually there was another party after the parade. So it's a very large event.
Very good. Very good.
Our crew has 1,200 riders in it currently.
1,200?
Yes.
I've never made it to Mardi Gras. Rick, have you made it to Mardi Gras yet?
Oh, yeah. And that's a hell of a lot of beads. My God.
Yes, it's a lot of beads. But we have a lot of friends that help us collect along the way, so that works out.
Now, last time I was at Mardi Gras, Brian, I got punched in the nose when I reached up to grab some of those beads.
Yeah, I got a black eye one year at St. Patrick's Day from a very large set of beads that I didn't quite see coming toward me and hit me in the eye. But, you got to take your risks.
Yeah, I had some blinking beads. Those are pretty cool,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, those are great. We have some of those this year, too. The technology is really getting excellent in the blinky beads.
There's nothing like Mardi Gras.
Nothing like it.
There we go. My mind's just buzzing 90 miles an hour.
Yeah, you're still.
I can't wait.
You're thinking about those red velvet beignets.
Well, that too. But I was thinking about since she does a twist on beads, literally.
Literally. I take the small beads that no one wants from the streets, and twist them into links and link them together into a very large fringed type of bead that everybody wants. So
I'm going to challenge you.
Okay.
That you're being heard on ACB radio. And once a year we hold an auction.
Oh.
And we'd love to see if you might donate something for the auction.
Absolutely.
That's of your own making.
Okay.
And then we can get a chance to
that would be fabulous.
Really play it up a bit.
That would be absolutely fabulous.
That's great. So now, because I have to get back to what they, so to speak, pay me for, right?
We get to
talk
about
actual healthy snacks
topic.
And that kind of stuff. So tell me how you got involved in this and what it means for blind vendors to be involved in healthy snacks. Why, when, how?
Why, when, how? Well, I am a big proponent of healthy vending. Like, I always knew that any stand that I eventually was awarded, I wanted to implement some sort of healthy vending. That's the why. When is RSVA wanted to do a healthy vending paper for, originally it was going to be for GAO, the General Accounting Office, yes, for about the feasibility, if healthy vending was feasible for the Randolph-Shepard program. And so I became lead researcher on that project in October. And started, end of October, early November, and so started doing research, and I had no idea where to start. So I just started digging and digging and digging. And, you know, what we really want to do is to present an option for Randolph-Shepard vendors who are struggling out there. You know, it's no secret that healthy vending has become a big topic. You know, the federal guidelines are out for healthy vending, and we wanted to create a path for vendors to go down. You know, we wanted to create a cohesive option for vendors to have, you know, so they tell you need healthy vending, so then what? You know, there's not really any place to go. So, you know, we wanted to partner with a company that could help us. Humans got, you know, a lot of training for us. They can help us get the products that we need. And really and truly, you know, we just want to shift the focus in Randolph-Shepard. Let's not operate like we did 50 years ago. Let's be proactive and let's be forward thinking and let's jump into the 21st century and get this thing going.
So when I think about vending and the like, and for that matter nutrition in general, part of the question is portion control, mm-hmm. and part of it is the actual product itself. And since you said from the very beginning that you enjoy cooking, mm-hmm. then you know that the joy of cooking is not opening cans and, you know, adding water and stir.
Right.
There's a lot of creativity in there, and there's a lot of flavor and creativity, and that a lot of what we eat these days is more as a matter of manufacturing than it is cooking and eating. So in terms of vending, how do you deal with the issue of portion control when people purchase something that might cost the same amount but has less total volume or weight?
Well,
are these products, you know, are they achieving their healthiness by being smaller portions?
Oh, right. Yeah, I understand what you say. the thing that I really like about Human and about the products in general that are being produced these days is that it's not about, yeah, I understand what you're saying about the 100 calorie packs and you get like three crackers in there and you're like, really? But, you know, snack food producers across the board are embracing the healthy, better for you segment. So they're all struggling and racing, actually, to produce better tasting, you know, larger portioned snacks these days. So I don't really think it's an issue of, you know, yeah, it's healthier for you because it's smaller. I think that and especially with Human's distribution, we can actually use products that are the standard portion size, but they just taste better, but they just happen to be healthier for you.
So can you give us a couple of examples of products that you've had and would think might find their way into RSVA vending stands?
Sure. Well, when I actually went out to California and visited Human in early December, and they have thousands of products out there, and they have products coming through the door every day that manufacturers want Human to test, and the way they test them is on their employees. And if the employees won't eat it, then they don't sell it. So while I was out there, they actually were testing these peanut butter cups, and they're called like Unreal, but it's a play on words, obviously, because everything in it actually is real. It's real peanut butter, you know, real sugar, no preservatives, no fillers, no, you know, xanthan gum and all that mess. And they were the best peanut butter cups I've ever had in my entire life. I'm actually jonesing for them right now. And also, Human creates they started to create their own line of snacks. And they had these barbecue crisps, which were, I think it's a rice product, and they were absolutely fabulous. And they also make like hot fries, which are killer. They're not lacking in flavor. They're spicy. They're zippy, and they tasted every bit as good as Chester's to me. So,
hey Pinky, quick question.
Yeah.
I've got a daughter who is celiac, you know, gluten free.
Right.
You know, gluten allergy. Is there an intersection between gluten-free stuff and healthy stuff?
Yeah, actually, snack food producers are starting to create a lot of that stuff.
It seems like gluten-free has gotten pretty sexy. You know?
Yeah, it has these days.
I mean,
as a chef, that's a real mess.
Everywhere you go, like Czech cereal, you know, the gluten-free part of the packaging is, you know, the lettering is as big as everything else.
Right. You know? Well, actually, snack food producers are starting to make a whole big line. You know, we've heard about the rice cakes of the 80s and 90s, and that's the thing. But these days they're actually starting to create snacks out of rice, which are actually flavorful. They have, you know, flavorings on them and stuff, and they're like lentil chips is a big thing that's going on now, and you know, popcorn chips, and I had some stuff, and I can't remember the name brand, unfortunately, but it was all made of seeds. It was like seed brittle, but it was gluten-free, and it was absolutely fabulous.
Wow.
So, and it's weird, you know, because, it's not just, yeah, like it's different flours that are being
right.
used. It's
because,
actually different products that
because,
are being
because
used.
Because, I mean, when I taste a lot of this gluten-free stuff my daughter has, and I really like it, you know, and I actually prefer it over time. I mean, the whole thing is, you know, I mean, the big hurdle you got to overcome is consumer, you know, the consumer reaction,
yes.
right? You got to get the consumer to try
yes.
the stuff.
It's a perceptive issue.
Yeah.
The whole thing is based on perception. People are like...
It's like a vicious circle.
It's
like, well, the vendor doesn't want to sell it because nobody wants to buy it.
Yes.
But if you can convince somebody to buy it, then
yes.
they'll buy it, and the vendor will want to sell it, right?
Well, right. The big thing also that, you know, Human does is they have big... Well, actually, we're going to conduct one tomorrow. A big taste testing of products just so people can see, well, actually, you know, things have come
right.
a long way. It's not the
yep.
it's not the baked Lays and the rice cakes of the past. The stuff actually tastes good.
Yep.
It just happens to be good for you.
So there's another word that you use that plays a part in all of this, and that's the word preservative, shelf life.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody who's been involved in vending know that, you know, you worry about being able to move enough product that nothing times out. What's the timeout situation when you're dealing with a product line that doesn't include preservatives?
As far as I know, it's about the same. I haven't seen any expiration dates that seem, you know, it's not like milk, you know what I mean? They just don't include it in there, but it seems to me like the expiration dates are just about the same.
So It's a matter of making sure that you are not that lazy vendor that puts product in and then comes back three months from now.
Hey, I'm not here to talk about lazy vendors. I'm just here to promote options.
I understand. But again, I remember when I, again, got my stand back in the day, it came with a dozen vending machines at other state buildings in the downtown area of Salem, Oregon. And I spent the first 3 months trying to pull things from all of these machines and update them.
Right,
and
the make
like.
Sure everything
it takes it takes more years. Work to pay attention to the expiration date.
I understand
of
that. I really do.
It's an important part of things. So one, we're talking about portions, and you're saying that that the healthy vendors of today are able to provide product that gives you that feeling that you're buying the same quantity you used to get. You're not having to give up quantity.
When I was at Human and I was looking at their product line, and they're like, for instance, their popcorn that they're currently, their white cheddar popcorn, it's, you know, 39 cents a bag wholesale, and it was very large. I'm thinking, wow, that's like, you know, a jumbo bag of chips, you know what I mean? Like,
I gotcha.
It's not Garrett's popcorn, Brian.
No, I know. Every once in a while, you have to splurge. We have this thing about Garrett's. We get it delivered about once every four or five months.
I've never heard of that.
You've never heard of Garrett's popcorn?
We need to talk, no.
I'm telling you.
It's the best cheese popcorn in the entire world.
Where's that come from?
Chicago.
Chicago.
Nice.
From Chicago. And there happens to be a distributor here in Vegas. So we are going to stop by and get us some Garrett's before.
Yeah, see, my thing like that is Martin's barbecued waffle chips. They are produced, actually, my fiance is friends with the producer of them. They're produced in Pennsylvania, but I had them as a child growing up in Virginia. So we were...
Barbecue waffle chips.
Oh, they are absolutely fabulous.
Well, again, I've got to get some names and how to do this. I recently signed up for something just to let the listeners know that although I'm, you know, I'm asking the questions they'd like to ask you, you know.
Yeah.
It's all a matter of quantity, price, and from a vendor's perspective, profitability.
Well, just to let you know, I mean, this is just a, you know, an aside, but a friend of mine in Louisiana who's extremely numbers conscious, he has, you know, a federal facility. It's got three different buildings. He has a total of, you know, 10 machines, but he was approached in, I want to say HHS, and said, you know, look, we want you to implement at least 25% of healthy vending. And at first he was like, what? But he looked around and found enough products to put in his machines to cover that. And he's actually looking for more now because he says, look, you know, here's the bottom line. Yeah, it costs me a little bit more per unit, but I can charge a lot more for the product. And my consumers are eating it up. He said, you know, his profit margin before he implemented healthy vending was 52%, and now he's running 60%. So he's all about looking for more healthy products because they make more money.
Yeah, well, I decided here recently that there were way too many chips going through my household. And so I wanted to find some alternative to at least part of it. You know, I don't expect everybody to say, roll over and suddenly become, you know, uber healthy. That takes time for people to change their way of life.
Yes, it does.
So I signed up for something called naturebox.com.
Okay.
And they sent me out a free sample box that had five different kinds of healthy snacks in it.
Uh-huh.
And my family, let me put it this way, they were only 1 ounce bags.
Oh.
But all of them were gone in about 2 hours.
Oh my gosh.
And even the ones that sounded peculiar by their name,
they taste pretty good.
Tasted good enough that if you could just allow yourself to taste it rather than read it by the label.
Exactly. This seed brittle that I got as a sample from Human was fabulous. I was like, gosh, where do I get more of this stuff?
Exactly. It's not what you're giving up, it's what you're getting.
You just have to be open to it. You know, I mean, yeah, lentil chips. Seriously, that sounds really weird. But, you know, a few years ago, hummus sounded weird. And now we all eat it and love it.
Exactly. Well, so, I've always loved hummus. But I'm one of those guys. And my problem is things like soy crisp.
The things that seemed odd to us. You know, hey, like 20 years ago, kale was only a garnish for salad bars. And now it goes in everything.
Yeah, it does.
You know, it's just a matter of being open to new things, trying new things. And who knows, you might actually like it.
Well, I'm excited to see a couple of things happening here at RSVA. One is, again, rather than spending your time dragging your heels about something, finding a way to make it work before you're forced to make it work.
That is exactly what we think, too. I mean, you know, the only reason that mandates are created is because people think that the vendors aren't going to give them what they want. If we give them what they want, no need for mandates, man. We all just work together and make it work out.
Yeah, I'm excited about the prospect of it. Well, thank you so much for coming and speaking with us.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Best of luck with the new stand.
Thank you. I
know you're going
to
be working hard, but if you've been a sous chef, you know what that's like already.
Yes, I do.
And now I'm going to take questions offline so that I can rack her brain and experience for some from personal gain. So thank you all for listening in here. Again,
thank you, everybody.
We're going to be doing the memorial service for Hazel at 5 p.m. here local. So hang in there. We'll give you a little bit more music, and we'll be back to you just shortly before those services begin.